Hey, it's Diane. It's Tuesday, March 18th, and we're just getting started. So, how's everybody's couple of weeks been?
So-so.
What's been going
on? I mean, it's just, you know, it's pretty much status quo. I actually just met with Elaine.
Oh.
One of our one-on-ones. And I don't know, does everyone who's on these calls go through the full process, or do some people just join these calls?
Some people just join the calls. So I think that some of them are just in the parent success system and just do the group calls, and then others do one-on-one coaching plus the group calls. So it's a pretty good mixture on the group.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was an interesting meeting for me because it highlighted sort of probably part of the reason why there's so much conflict in the house with our son and, you know, this whole notion of sort of relating to him through what are my primary values
mm-hmm.
to the exclusion of other values that would make things more peaceful.
So, because part of what you did in the one-on-one coaching was to identify your core values. And so what I'm hearing in that is that when you lead from your core values, if it's not a value for him or if it's not a motivator for him to honor your values, it creates conflict. Is that kind of the bottom line of it?
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, so what are you going to do differently?
I'm going to try to push my bully values a little bit down the chain and bring up some of the other values that I think will improve the relationship.
Uh-huh.
There's one other person on the call, right?
Yeah. So you want to give not just Leslie, but the folks who are listening, because people listen to these recordings. You know, you want to give them bully value 101 and explain to them the difference.
Yeah, so in our one-on-one session, it was really interesting. Elaine just asked me some questions about kind of what, you know, what pivotal moments in my life, describe pivotal moments in my life, and describe things that make me mad or annoyed. And anyway, in the course of answering these questions, she wrote down, like, probably 50 words that aren't even necessarily words that I said, but words that she took from what I was saying that signified sort of what my values were, and then you could group those. And so very high on my list of values, evidently. I mean, it's not a secret to me, but it's like discipline and success and discipline, success, and autonomy, sort of as headers of values that matter. And so, you know, when you think about homework, for instance, and things that, like, really matter to me, it really matters to me that homework get done. It matters to me that my kid be disciplined about it and, you know, independent and figure out how to do it and care about doing it and get it done on time and have your work be neat and be successful, you know, I'm constantly harping on him and riding him because those things are so important to me. But then I kind of feel like, I mean, part of it, it's, you know, well, I feel like it's responsible parenting, but she pointed out, like, nowhere on my even though on my full list of words there was, like, love and connection and family and nurturing, I didn't bring any of those up into, like, my top values. And they are values of mine, and they need to play probably a bigger role, because if I, you know, at least sometimes focused more on that, more on the connection, more on the relationship, and less on the you have to be successful, you have to learn how to be disciplined, you have to, you know, it would improve, theoretically, our relationship and maybe motivate him better than what we're doing now, which isn't really motivating him that well.
Right. Right. No, that's brilliant. And thank you for explaining it so well. It's really helpful. But I think that what ends up happening is that, you know, we value having smart kids, accomplished kids. We value accomplishment and intellect and performance and some of these other things. And a lot of these values end up talking louder than the value of connection and self-esteem and some of these other things because, you know, they're energetically, I'm going to use that word, big, but they're more intense feelings. And so what ends up happening is that we end up leading with those and we end up leading with perform and accomplish and get it done. And some of the softer skills, and this is a great segue, actually, Meredith, because we're going to talk about compassion today. And so the parallel to that is kind of like, how can you look at it from your child's perspective? How can you have compassion from where they're coming from, what their values are, what their challenges are? And I think that what ends up happening is that there's conflict because of our competing values, but then there's also conflict because we understand that on some level that our kid has challenges, but because we can't completely understand where the line is, those bully values come in and say, come on, perform, do it, get it done. And it makes it really difficult. I see Terry join us. Hi, Terry. Oh, she may have us on mute. Sometimes she does.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, hi. Glad you're here. We're just checking in. We've got Meredith and Leslie on. Leslie, how have things been going for you for the last couple weeks?
Actually, pretty good. Really try to practice the, you know, the championing. I can't say the word.
I can't either.
Yeah. looking for all things great and small that I could, you know, comment on. And I shared some of the ideas, you know, the yes and, you know, that kind of thing with friends of mine who are going to take it to their marriages.
Awesome.
But, yeah. They're like, oh, that's really good. But, it was interesting that very first 2 weeks ago on Tuesday, so as soon as we were done with the call, when he got home, Patrick, I put it into practice. And about 2 hours into it, I had found enough things to where he got real confused and he was like, I said something really nice to him and he was like, now I'm going to bite your face off. And it was kind of tongue-in-cheek, like, I don't know what to do with this.
That's really funny.
Yeah, it was pretty great. So I've been continuing to try to practice that, and it certainly I have a saying. I always say practice makes progress. So you know, it's. I'm hoping that it becomes ingrained. And then I've complained in the past. You know, since I've joined, I've complained about him and getting out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so a couple of, like last week, I don't remember exactly when, I left him to his own, and he slept and slept and slept, and he got up, and he says, I don't know why I can't get up. Well, I have some ideas, but I said, what can I do to help you? I said, but I can't keep coming in here. I said, I think that I'm going to come in, I'm going to shut off your fan, I'm going to open your blinds so the sun's on your face, and then that's as far as I'm going to go. And he said, well, that might help. And so that's it. And he is getting up. When I go in to do those things, I ask him how many times the alarm has rang. And like a couple of mornings ago, he said three times. I said, well, now it's when you sit up. I left the room. I said, I'm not coming back in here again. And so a few minutes later, he was sitting up. So, you know, I'm not sure but, you know, I don't want to fight with him anymore about this. And I don't know. It's been a good couple of weeks. So.
Well, it sounds like you're doing really great, Leslie. You're practicing every week what you're learning and you're putting into place. And it sounds like you sound much more up this week than you did, you know, a couple of times ago where you were really kind of frustrated with the whole situation.
Yes. Well, and I also listened, I registered for the homework, and there was some real good things in there, too, about, you know, determining who owns what and things like that. So it's, you know, I think we're making some progress, and I think by backing off him a little bit, and, you know, he might be more motivated to step up to the plate. And, you know, he'll be 16 in a couple of months, so maybe all things kind of working together, he might start seeing some progress here. So that's it for me.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's great. Anybody else want to check in? Terry or Marion?
Hey, it's Marion. I have to say, last time I was so nervous about our science fair project that was coming up.
Yep.
And I did exactly what whoever was just talking said. I backed off letting him own a lot of this stuff. And he rose to the occasion and did fantastic.
Yay!
He made an A. He got it done. You know, there was a little anxiety here and there, but, you know, it has worked. And then he is even, like, towards the end of last week, you know, he's like, Mom, I want to talk to you, which is a great thing. Him just wanting to talk, and then he said, how come you haven't been putting my medicine out? And I said, well, it's because you told me you weren't going to take it. And he goes, well, I want to. He goes, why don't you start leaving it out? And he started taking his medicine again.
Hmm. And so I'm like, what's becoming clear to you in terms of your role?
Keeping my mouth shut. I mean, letting him, and if he has voice, saying, you know, he wants to take responsibility for some of these things. And
yep.
A teacher wanted to meet with him, and I was trying to help orchestrate, you know, to kind of mentor him. And he goes, Mom, I don't want to meet with this teacher after school, just for mentoring purposes. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not going to fight the battle. You have said what you want to say, and we'll just go forward from there, because it's not going to change me. It's all about you.
Right. And there's a subtle difference in terms of the tone that you're using, Marion, because I think a lot of times we, when our kids kind of push back and say, I want to be independent, we go, fine, and then we just kind of throw them to the alligators, right? So it's like, you don't want help, then, you know, forgive my friend, screw you. You guys are, you're on your own. I'm out of this thing, you know. See what happens. Good luck. But the important part of the transition, which I think is what you're sensing, is you still stay engaged, you still take action, but you respond rather than leading. You know, so at the very beginning, even you might be saying, okay, so you're not going to meet with a teacher. What are you going to do instead? Because something has to happen.
Right.
You know, so you might be directing them to a decision or directing them to support. You know, it's the same sort of thing with the science fair. It's like you might stand there and ask them probing questions to keep them going, but you aren't going to tell them what to do. And there's this subtle difference. And particularly as they're transitioning independence, it's really easy to say, just fine, you're on your own, good luck. And then they, you know, they fail or they get mad or we get mad or, you know, it's this subtly giving distance instead of letting go. And I think that it sounds like you're getting a good sense of that.
Yeah, that's what Elaine's working with me on.
Yay.
She's coaching me through this.
Awesome. So, Terry, how have things been going for you?
Probably not quite as well as everybody else that I've heard. The backing off thing we've kind of been doing, we did it all last grading period, and that has helped to a certain extent, although it's still really hard to do because it is not my natural tendency.
Yeah.
And he did, it was kind of funny because we were talking about, you know, his grades or whatever, and I said, well, I have to tell you, it wasn't nearly as bad because I really thought it was going to be a crash and burn. He's like, oh, thanks, Mom. So it was kind of a funny little moment, but yeah, so he did okay. He's, you know, he didn't do as well as he could have, but that's kind of the whole, you know, issue right now. But he still got A's and B's, so that was good.
Yeah.
the complimenting or the championing or whatever, I still think it is so hard. I'm going to have to make a more concerted effort because there are just so many things that I'm annoyed about that those tend to rise to the top more than the looking for good things, because there seem to be so many more of those than good things. And I've just got to be better about that.
Well, and it's hard. And so what I would encourage you to do, Terry, is to find a place to kind of vent your frustration and your irritation. And maybe you keep a frustration log and you just like write it down and then you burn it or whatever you do. But it's kind of like you need to get it out because it's a normal reaction to be frustrated. And as Meredith, and I don't know if you were on as she was talking about this, but she was talking about some of her values or performance and achievement. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, Meredith, but you said it so eloquently. But it's when you're a person, and a lot of us as women and as moms are, you know, get it done, do well. We have values around excellence, and we have values around performance and doing our best. And so when we see what is quote-unquote not best, we want to push, and we want, and that because it feels like it's out of conflict for our values. But the challenge is that in reality, we can't decide what's best for anybody else. You know, we can't even, and I want to pick on you, Carrie, but even to say that your child didn't do as good as he could have, I personally don't believe that we're in a position to judge that. And part of what we're going to talk about is today's compassion, which is, you know, how do you create a perspective that really holds the other person as whole, and our kids especially, in a position where they do try their best? Because I think that in a lot of instances, our kids do, I would say, you know, the vast majority of the time, our kids are doing the best that they can in that moment, and their ADHD and their development and their whatever else is getting in the way, and so it makes it difficult. But it's hard because we sit here and we watch and we judge because we know that they could have done this instead, and we know that they could have done this instead, but that's us, that's not them. And so it makes it really difficult as a parent to know where to hold the bar and how that impacts them. And so that's just kind of the comment that I would make, is that, you know, find ways to acknowledge yourself, because your feelings are real and your expectations are appropriate because they're your expectations. And if you're finding that it's getting in the way and that backing off might help your child to be more successful, then figure out how to make that work. Does that make sense, Terry?
Yes. Just hard to do. But yes.
Yep. Yeah, it is hard to do.
What you described about the performance or the whatever, yes, that is so me. And so it's hard when you see what you perceive as lack of effort when they have so much capability. It's hard to, you know, to know how to respond to that in a positive way.
Right. And so part of the beauty of the exercise that I would from last time, and I'd encourage you to keep trying to do it, is that if for just 2 weeks you can let go of that and say, you know what, 2 weeks from now I'll pick up the perfectionist again and I'll start pushing, but try for 2 weeks to just celebrate it, because I think that's part of what the other folks have heard, is that when you celebrate, when the kids feel their successes, they're more likely to be successful. And it's the difference between the carrot and the stick. If we're pushing our kids, come on, you can do more, you can do more, you can do more, a lot of times our kids just shut down. If you celebrate with our kid, you did great, you did great, you did great, a lot of times it encourages them to do even more. So it's this subtle difference that I would encourage you to at least try and play with and see how it plays out in with your family. And I think that's true for everybody.
Okay, I will.
All right. All right, any other comments, check-ins before we jump into today's topic?
You know, this is Marian, and I'll, you know, one thing I'll say too, I totally relate to where she's coming from with, you know, the pushing. You know, you have that high level of expectation almost. But I also have found for me what I have started to realize when I go back, I think about
I have a perspective that I'm thinking other people are going to think I'm a failure because I can't get my child to do blah. And I have work really, I've been working really hard to remove that out of my brain so that I can see his success and applaud the process. And it's work, and I think that's what helped with the science fair.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. So our session today is about compassion. And compassion is about really kind of trying to get a little bit into our kids' shoes and have appreciation for where they're at, both from a ADHD challenges perspective and then also for our kids, because a lot of our kids are middle school, early high school, from a developmental stage as well. And I find this tool to be so really powerful when we get into these moments where it's like, okay, they should be able to do this. Because the reality is that, you know, if we're all particularly in like Marianne and Terry, I'm a get it done, do it performance kind of person, and I'm very focused on outcome. And it's really easy to kind of drive from that place. But if we do that and our kids don't achieve what we expect them to achieve, it means that they've failed. And our kids have plenty of time to fail. And if we set them up to have one more opportunity for failure, it really sometimes ends up being the opposite outcome of what we want it to, because they don't have this natural response to cause and effect. You know, so, well, if I fail, you know, for those of us who are neurotypical, if I failed last time, I'm going to try harder and I'm going to do better next time. I mean, that's kind of a normal, natural cause and effect sort of thing. And what happens with our kids, because they failed so much, is that every time they see a failure, it's almost like you're taking a chip out of their, you know, out of their pot. And it's kind of like they get down to a certain level and they're like, why should I bother? Because I'm just going to fail again. And so it's really important to kind of find ways to match where they're at, see where they're at, and to have compassion for that. And so, for example, you know, the examples that we give in the session today, we're talking about, you know, if your kid has a difficult time getting out the door and they're moving really slow, or if they are behaving immaturely. And I think that this is an example that I had just last night was, you know, my son was playing some game on the computer and it took him a while to even get to the computer because he had other stuff he had to do. And so then he had a short period of time and he was really frustrated when I came to tell him it's time to turn it off. And, you know, if I can, in that moment, instead of getting frustrated that he's pushing back and saying, give me more time, just stop for a second and say, wow, I wonder what he's feeling right now. You know, he's feeling like he's worked his butt off. He's you know, done everything that I've asked him to do. He's checked off all the boxes. He only ended up having 30 minutes, and now he's really disappointed because he doesn't have as much time to play the game as he'd really like to. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that I completely change my reaction. It's not like I'm going to give him 2 more hours to play the game. But if I can sit there and go, wow, he's really disappointed, or wow, he's really feeling angry, or wow, this is really hard for him, then I can approach it different and I can respond differently. And the thing that I think compassion allows us to do more than anything else is it allows us to acknowledge and to validate. And those are two really powerful coaching tools. So it's kind of like, wow, I can tell you're really disappointed because you didn't have as much time on the computer as you wanted to, and it makes perfect sense that you'd be upset right now. You know, and so then you just stop and you don't, you know, you stop and you acknowledge and you validate. You maybe let your child vent a little bit more and then say, okay, I know that that's true, but where do we go from here? You know, so sometimes compassion just gives us the space to acknowledge and validate what they're going through. And sometimes it gives us the space to react differently. So if we know that our kids are doing the best that they can, and I talked a little bit about this a few minutes ago, you know, when you look at your child and you say, you know, my child is doing the best that they can in that moment. Yes, maybe they have more brain capacity or more intellect or more, you know, more ability at moments. But if I find that it helps my clients and for me as well to really assume in that moment that our kids do the best that they can. And so you focus on there in that place, rather than, doesn't mean you let go of the what you want them to be able to do, and you don't, it's the same thing with, we talked about a couple weeks ago with expectations. Doesn't mean you let go of raising the bar, but you start with where they're at, and you assume that our kids want to do their best, and they do the best that they can in the moment where they're at. And it gives us more power because we feel like we can do something about it. It's, you know, in those moments where I feel like, why can't they just, you know, why can't he just do this? You know, it's kind of like my focus becomes, how can I help him to do this instead of why can't he, which feels better. And it gives you, it really changes the tone for the interaction between you and your child. And so that's kind of the bottom line of compassion, looking at it from their perspective. And this, by the way, works with spouses too. So I don't know, some of you have ADHD spouses, some of you have neurotypical spouses, but, you know, trying to find a way to look at it from their perspective and assume that they're doing the best that they can and having compassion for that can really be helpful in moving things forward and in feeling better about how things are going. So that's kind of two outcomes of this. So what are your thoughts in terms of our topic today?
I think it's good. I think it's interesting. Occasionally I find myself doing that, but not enough.
So give me an example of where you think it might be helpful.
Well, I mean, I think it would be helpful in every situation. I'm ambivalent about the notion of assume that he's doing his best. Although I acknowledge it probably would, having that assumption or presumption would probably result in a better conclusion than otherwise. However, I struggle with whether that is sort of abdicating parental responsibility in some way, or, you know, when do you assume they're not doing the best they can? You know, when my child seems to be getting pink slips pretty frequently at school these days, and he got one yesterday, and the comment on the pink slip was he couldn't stop talking out without raising his hand even after being warned, when the rest of the class was standing up doing an oral, you know, something, this was in a foreign language, doing some oral component of whatever the lesson was that day, he sat down, and then when the teacher put him in a quiet room to work by himself, he didn't do any work. I mean, he was just being belligerent, right? Was he doing the best he can? I would argue he's not doing the best he can. Maybe he can't stop himself from talking out in class. I'll give him that. Is he doing the best he can when he chooses to focus on Minecraft instead of his homework after, you know, we come in there four times? Are you doing your homework? You need to do your homework. Are you doing your homework?
So I guess yours is a natural conclusion. And I think that there's a subtle difference between doing the best they can and being able to do better. And I want to create a distinction there, because the reality is that, you know, if you think about even yourself, so let's take a minute here and you know, think about when you've made decisions that you've gone back and said, wow, if I had that to do over, I would have decided differently. You know, so the great example is kind of when we end up yelling at our kids, and it's kind of like, and then we regret it after the fact. You know, technically, did we do the best we can? No. But in that moment, did we purposefully say, okay, I'm going to wantonly yell at my kid, and I could not yell at them, but I'm going to choose to not yell at them? Right. Most of us don't choose to yell. Most of us just yell because it's a natural reaction in a really frustrating situation. Can we work on not yelling? Can we move forward and try to continue to use the tools and the tricks we have to not yell? Absolutely. But it doesn't mean that we could have not yelled in that moment. Does that subtle distinction make sense, Meredith?
Yes.
So I'm not saying that you shouldn't hold the bar and help your child to, you know, find ways to break from Minecraft, But what that's suggesting is that with forewarning and whatever level of tired and whatever level of sleep and whatever level of, you know, neurotypical challenge and whatever level of teenager pushback, he did the best he could to break away, which may have been I'm being belligerent, or it may have been I'm having a really difficult time transitioning. And so the compassion is looking at it and digging in a little bit to figure out, is this an ADHD challenge and I should address it this way, or is this a you know, pushing back teen and I should deal with it this way, and trying both and figuring out which one works, because ultimately that's what you want, is you want a result that works and not a fight.
We have that same issue with the Minecraft stuff and wanting to do that versus the homework. And I do the same thing. It's like, have you started your homework? Have you started your homework? And I still haven't, you know. I think he gets tired of me saying, have you started your homework? Because he thinks that I'm nagging, which I am. But, you know, I feel like there's a responsibility that he's got to live up to as well. And I don't know how to circumvent.
Well, and so I guess the question is, yeah, so he's not able to. It's the same thing with the waking up in the morning. I'm thinking about Leslie and the, you know, four, I don't remember how many times you said you come in, but I came in, I went into Jacob's room 4 times this morning. And finally, on the last time, I said, look, you don't have a motivator. You're having a difficult time getting out of bed. And if you don't get out of bed, I'm going to be late. And so it's, you know, I feel like I'm the one that's trying to motivate you, and that's just not working because that's not the way your brain works. What are we going to do? You know, and so it's about, again, you know, figuring out what's, Marion, for you, it's like, is it realistic for him to be able to break away from Minecraft, or do you need to set him up for success by saying Minecraft is a reward for homework, or, you know, if you get off Minecraft on time, then you can do, you know, X, Y, Z. You know, so it's kind of like, what is the system and structure that you have in place, and is it working? And I think that's the piece, I think, that compassion allows you to do more than anything else. It's kind of like, if you've tried something 100 times and it's not working, that's a sign of insanity. If you keep trying something and expecting a different outcome, I can't remember what the quote is. It's like from Einstein. It's kind of like, the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over again and expecting something different.
Right.
You know, and we tend to do that. You know, it's kind of like we go in there 3 times, and then we go in there 4 times, and we go in there 5 times, and we think magically one of these times something's going to work. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe they just really can't break away, and they need something different. How does that apply in this instance?
I mean, the problem is, and, you know, I feel like the problem specifically with the Minecraft is it's on their computers that their homework is on.
Exactly.
And so it's nearly impossible unless I sit in the room with him to ensure that he doesn't get distracted. And he'll say to me, he tattles on himself all the time. So I'll come in and I'll be like, have you gotten any work done? He'll say, I'm just really distracted. I'm getting distracted by everything. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know what to say other than, well, don't get distracted. And he knows. He knows that he's being distracted. He knows what the issue is. And oftentimes he just can't do anything about it. And
okay, so stop for a second. So beautiful compassion there. Sometimes he just can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I totally, yes, I acknowledge that 100%.
Okay. That's the compassion. So how does that help you to problem solve in this instance?
I'm not sure it helps me problem solve. It just helps me not get so mad.
Okay. So if you had a child who could not avoid getting distracted, who has Minecraft on his computer, how could you solve that challenge?
Well, I mean, what I'd like to do, and if I were probably a more hardcore disciplinarian, I would take it off his computer. But then it's gone, right? So then it's not as simple as that. And to my knowledge, there's no way to sort of turn it off. turn it off and turn it on kind of thing.
So I have a question here.
Yeah, I was going to say, does anybody have a suggestion here? Because I think that there's other people who have solved this problem, potentially. Leslie, is that you?
No, this is Leslie. I have a suggestion here, and I'm not 100% sure this could work, but I'm pretty sure, and I could probably get the actual answer this evening. But you can set up user accounts on computers, and you could put Minecraft on an account that is password protected. And so he could do his homework on the account that he would use, but then, and then once he's done, then you can open up the other account for him to have the Minecraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to suggest the same thing. And the other thing you can do is some of the anti or the trial control programs will allow you to shut down certain executables. So you can say, you have to come to me and get the, you know, I have to turn on Minecraft for you before you can use it. And it does take more work from you, granted, but it's an alternative. Any other suggestions?
Throw the computer out the door. No.
Yeah, I wish everything was back to, like, books and paper.
Yeah.
Does your school require the computer? Is that how?
Well, I mean, the computer really is a great thing. And he, because he has the worst handwriting on the planet, types everything and always has. Like, his, even before middle school, he was using the laptop for all his work. So it's a great facilitator for him, a great tool. It just has this, you know, this ability to track.
Yeah. So I'm going to take us back to compassion and see what other thoughts folks had as we were talking about looking at it from our child's perspective.
Was that a question? Wait, say that.
Yes. I'm just interested in other people's thoughts about this construct around compassion.
Well, I liked the scenario that you used about, you know, working hard and whatnot, and then not having enough time, you know, the amount of time that he wants on the computer. That fits into, you know, our situation perfectly. And at that time, when I've been able, you know, because, see, you know, one parent has been kind of hard in this family. The other parent has compensated. So, and
pretty common, Leslie.
I know. And so, you know, he's kind of confused, and he knows how to play to some extent. But recently that very thing happened, and then at that time I just, you know, I acknowledged it and then asked him what would work for him, and he said, could I just have one more half hour, and then I agreed. It seemed to be a reasonable request, and it was still early enough in the evening, but I, you know, for a long time, it's not been that way. There's been a hard and fast rule, and there's no exceptions. And I don't know that works very well.
And I think a lot of parents. I think that's a great example, because I think a lot of parents feel like once they've made a rule and once they've decided something, that it undermines their authority if they back down. And I think that there are times when that can. And I think that there are times that there are ways. My experience has been that there are times that you can do it and not undermine your authority. So what you were saying was that you can ask him to make a request and say what makes sense to you. And I think our kids are old enough to have compassion for us, and we can say, okay, well, I could let you do that, but on some level that means I'm caving and I need to be able to continue to have some authority in the house. So how do we come up with a solution that's going to help you to, you know, feel some pressure of not following through, and also honor the fact that I can tell you're really disappointed. You know, so it's that subtle thing. And some of our kids are not quite there in terms of their ability to have those conversations, and some are. And so it's about finding the right balance. Other thoughts?
One of the things I was thinking when I was working with my child on, you know, talking to him the other day when, he was supposed to go see the teacher the next day, and he was just, he was really, really upset about it. And I really did stop myself and go, I had to think through as I sat there with him and was going, what is it, obviously he's very, this is upsetting to him. So there's a block there for him. And B, it's like, what am I trying to get out of it? And does that even play into the scenario? And I decided, my portion of it really didn't have anything to do with it. And the minute I told him, I was like, you know what? It's okay. You don't have to go meet with the teacher after school. And his whole attitude changed. And this just relief came over him. And I think I was trying to show the compassion and go, I don't have to say this, I think I wanted it more than he, obviously more than he did.
Well, and the reality is that maybe the opportunity will come up again for him to advocate, to the teacher. Maybe
right.
It won't. I mean, I think that that's the piece of it is kind of, trusting in the process and knowing that part of what was important to that, and for you it sounded like, was having him do it, as opposed to you stepping in and doing it yourself. And so
right.
That's the balance.
Mm-hmm.
Terry, how does this help kind of with the challenges that you've been having with your expectations?
I'm pondering. I mean, I think it still goes back to being more mindful about my responses. I think it's very hard for me to put myself in his shoes because it's still hard for me to understand why can't you, do this. So it is going to have to be a concerted effort on my part to make that, mental change.
Well, no, and that makes sense. I think that's why this whole concept of everybody does the best that they can in that moment is so helpful for me, because I don't know that I can ever know whether they can or can't. But if I start by assuming they can't, I problem solve very differently than if I assume that they can and they're being belligerent and I just get frustrated and angry and it doesn't move things forward.
Exactly. So I'm going to try that. I'm going to try that mindset. Maybe I need to write on a piece of paper and put it somewhere, to post-it note or something. Open a cabinet door and look at it.
What would your post-it note say, Terry?
What would it say?
Yeah.
It would say, well, I don't know, something about assume they're doing the best they can and go from there or something like that.
Right. It doesn't mean you can't help them to do better, but assume that they're doing what they can up until now. Maybe it's the up until now piece. I know that Elaine says that a lot, where it's kind of like, okay, you've been doing the best you can up until now. Do you want to do better, and what can I do to help you get there? Any other thoughts about compassion? Let's say I'm thinking about you and your son laying there in bed, and I'm like, how many mornings do I get up and go, oh, yeah, I totally wish I could be still laying in bed right now, and I'm not. So I get it, but then you're balanced between the part of you that's resentful because you're not in bed because you had to get up to get them out of bed.
Yeah. Well, I'm just really trying to get to natural consequences here. So on the Tuesdays that I don't have group, I have something else that I'm wanting to do, and it requires me to be out of the house and at another location by 9 o'clock in the morning. And last week, I did that. And I left him here. And he was actually, oh, I can't remember if he was still in bed. I don't think he was. And then he knew what he was supposed to do, and I found out later that he had not done that. He had played Minecraft all morning. So I homeschool Patrick. I'm not actually doing it. He's enrolled in a homeschool high school. They send the books. He takes the tests. He passes the class and gets the credit. And then he's in a technical center in the afternoons. So he has this work he's doing. And I simply informed him. He said, "I made a mistake, Mom." And I said, "Well, the next time you make that mistake, then the computer goes with me. And then that's what will happen." So he has one more chance. I will be doing this next Tuesday. I will be leaving this house. He will be responsible for himself and to be ready when his ride comes. And I think by keeping it calm and, you know, always keeping it, you know, I try to keep it so that he doesn't ever feel like he has to lie. So he tells me the truth, and then I'll follow through. And I'm trying not, you know, not to get upset about it. I think in that case, he could have done better. So, you know, he did exactly what he wanted to do.
Right. And so, but at the same time, you know that he wants to be able to, you know, he wants to be successful. He wants to get his work done. He wants to have access to the computer. And I think that the thing that I love about what you're doing is that you're setting him up, and I would encourage you before the next week where, you know, before the next time, you know, so he's got one more chance before you're going to take the computer with him, you know, to sit down with him and say, okay, you know that the next time that you do Minecraft instead of doing your work and I get home, if your work's not done, that I'm going to have to take the computer the next time. What do you need to do to make sure that you don't end up on Minecraft, because Minecraft is this wonderful, fun distraction. I mean, I would much rather, I don't like Minecraft, but it's like anybody would much rather do Minecraft than homework. You had the choice, right?
Yeah.
And the reality is that that's not what's going to help you to get done with your schoolwork. So what do you need to do to set yourself up for success? Do you need to text me? Do you need, you know, do you need to lock down Minecraft? Do you need to, you know, what is it that you need that's going to help you to be able to be successful? And then, you know, you get it. You get how anybody should get how distracting Minecraft is. It's easy to get distracted. I don't know about you, but I was doing something looking for something on the internet the other day, and I looked up and it had been 45 minutes. I'm like, what the hell? The heck just happened? And I didn't want to be distracted, but I was, because it's sexy and it's distracting. So it makes perfect sense that our kids would be distracted. And we want to set them up for success. And so it may not be realistic to not, you know, to let them go off on their own and be able to self-regulate. I think that, getting back to this, they do the best that they can. If our kids have shown us over and over again that they can't self-regulate, that they can't break away, the assumption is that they can't.
Well, and that's what will happen with him, you know. So he tried to give him room to, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt. Okay, so you said you made a mistake, and you know, by saying that, he's saying that he can do better. That he can do better.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see. And we'll try it one more time, and then that will be it. Then the computer goes with me. I don't have the separate accounts because he doesn't do his schoolwork on the computer. I have not set him up for the online classes. I refuse. But I know that all the kids that are going to the public schools here in our area, they all have iPads, and I think that would just, for me, that would be a nightmare. It would just be a nightmare. So.
Yep. Okay. So, what other thoughts do you guys have? We're going to do a quick wrap up. I look at the clock here. We have 10 minutes. So let's quickly do our questions and have everybody take a minute and write down what they're going to do in the next couple weeks. So questions are, what did I learn or get clear about today? How can I apply this to my life right now? What is a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success? So just take a minute, write that down, and then if you're ready to share what you're going to do, we'd love to hear that. Okay, what's everybody's check out? Who wants to start?
This is Leslie. I'm not sure I have an answer for every single question here, but what's really jumping out at me about this is the part about, you know, allowing myself to acknowledge and validate and hearing him out. That is one of his biggest complaints, is that no one listens to him. And so to hear what he has to say and to really think about what it is that he's saying and then asking where do we go from here, I think will be super, super helpful for, you know, for the interaction. He is here all day. Well, you know, most of the day. This afternoon thing is the first time in 5 years where he hasn't been here all day. So anyways, I think that is a very, very helpful bit for me, and that's about as far as I have gotten as far as these questions.
Great. Well, and I love that. Thank you for highlighting that acknowledgement and validation. And the challenge is that it takes time to do that. And a lot of times we're triggered and we're in that moment, and it's like we're trying to run out the door, and the last thing we want to do is to listen to our kids gripe. But sometimes it's really what they need because they don't get a lot of time to kind of air and vent how they're feeling, and they're becoming young adults, many of these kids, and they, you know, we know how good it feels to be able to speak our piece, even if ultimately it doesn't end up going the way that we want it to, and I think our kids, and I know that our kids do as well, so the more you can do that, the easier it is for them, so thanks for sharing that, Leslie. Other thoughts in terms of what folks learned today or what they're going to focus on for the next couple of weeks?
Leslie said something that I need to really practice more of. It's like the question was you were going to ask your son is, where do we go from here? Is asking my son that. Mm. To help him take ownership and problem solve. And that way he can still know I'm on his side to help.
And you're putting the responsibility on him to say what's, you know, so what do we do about it?
Right. You know, as I've looked this morning and see that, yep, we have another zero that's popped up. It's frustrating because the assignment was due like over a month ago and the teacher's just now putting the grade in there and I had no clue.
Right.
But then I have to go, okay, what are we going to do about it?
Great.
Or what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, I was going to say, can I offer a slight shift? It's, you know, he's at the age where you can say, what are you going to do about it, and do you need me to help?
Right.
Great. Other thoughts? Terry or Meredith?
Well, this is Terry. I'm driving now, so I can't look at the exact questions, but I think I'm going to do that post-it note and put it in an inconspicuous place that I can just open it and say those questions that you guys just talked about. I like those. And writing down my frustrations might be a good idea as opposed to voicing them. And I'm still working on the celebrating because I think I got probably a B on that from the past 2 weeks.
You can do this, Terry. I know you can. So I'm celebrating with you that you're going to do it again because I think that it's hard to do it. And you've been working on this for a while, and it's exhausting. Our kids are older, and we've been dealing with a lot of crap for a long time, many of us. So it's hard to shift. But congratulations for making that commitment, and I know you can do it.
I just echo what everyone else has said. I mean, assuming he's doing his best, asking him what his thoughts are about, you know, how it could change and what can I do to help versus telling him how it's going to be. And championing, I need to do that more.
Mm-hmm. So what do you need to do, Meredith, to get from that place where you're telling him what to do to the place where you're asking him what he wants to do?
I just need to be mindful about it. I just have to do it.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being completely impossible, 1 being really super easy, how are you feeling about your ability to do that in the next couple weeks?
I feel pretty good about it. I'd say an 8.
Okay, great. Is there anything that, any kind of tool or reminder or anything that's going to help you to be able to do that more easily?
I could probably stand to have a note to myself.
Right. Post-it notes are miracles. I don't know, you know, the self-help industry didn't count on you. Post-it didn't count on the self-help industry to be a side industry, but it definitely has made a difference for me. Anybody else? Final thoughts on compassion. Anybody want to use this on your spouse?
Nah, no, I'm just kidding.
Let's just take one step at a time, shall we?
No, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a really good idea. I really, truly do. I've read that sometimes one person really can change the atmosphere in the house. Now, it might require a hotel room once a month.
Yeah. No, I think I would tell you that it's shifted my life personally to be able to do that with everybody.
Yeah.
Because I'm not as resentful, and I think that's the difference. It's like if you can have compassion, it helps you to let go of resentment.
Yes. I like that.
There's a blog in there somewhere, I think. All right, everybody. Thank you for a great week. You did a good job. And in 2 weeks, we're going to get together and talk about what's next. Not taking it personally. Another good one. So continuing to celebrate and on having compassion. Thanks, everybody.
Say,
thank
Diane.
You.
Diane.
Yep.
Can you hang on for, I have just a quick question.
Okay, can I turn the recording off real quick, Leslie?
Yeah.